It's David Aloka here, and welcome back to MyProtein's brand new podcast called The Scoop, where we do just that. We get you the scoop on the most nail-biting, intense, and controversial topics in fitness, with our expert guests providing the information to help you make up your mind on what to believe. Topics discussed in gyms, homes, pubs, and just about anywhere around the world surrounding sports, nutrition, and training, this is where you're going to get the scoop. Today's topic is surely one that's been debated many, many times, and one that has a lot of intrigue, and that is, are steroids the answer for better bodybuilding? To discuss this, we have two exceptional guests. Thomas Moore, a YouTuber and fitness enthusiast who documents his bodybuilding journey using steroids, and Dave Crosland, a man who's pushed his body to the limits with training, food, and steroids, and made a film about it. Now works to educate others on using safely. Dave, Tom, how are we doing?
Good, mate, good.
Good, thank you. All good.
Before we stretch into the depths of that, we're going to go through some quick fire questions. Tom, I'm going to start with you.
Okay. You
ready to take this away?
I am, sir. Go ahead.
All right. Barbells or dumbbells?
Dumbbells.
Chocolate or crisps?
Crisps.
Back or biceps?
Back.
Snacks or three big meals?
Three big meals.
Countryside or city?
City.
Football or rugby?
Football.
Training with friends or training alone?
Training alone.
Mr. Solo. Hands.
Always.
I see you. Dave, over to you, mate. Let's rock and roll. Starters or dessert?
All starters.
Starters, and like that. Organised or messy deck?
Should be, but is messy, unfortunately.
Chest day or leg day?
Leg day.
You said that with so much, you know what I mean? You knew what you was getting with that.
I hate training chest. Short...
Is it?
That's why it's so bad.
That is a lot of people's favourites. Yeah, I mean, when I say a lot of people, I'm talking about myself. Short and intense or long and slow training sessions?
Short and intense.
Going keto or going vegan?
Keto. Don't ever say that word again.
Lions or tigers?
I'm going to cheat. Ligers.
Ligers. A little crossbreed, little hybrid. Mm. I like that. Fabulous, fabulous. Well, all right, okay. I think we can glean a bit from the both of you, from your answers there. But I think as we've gone through the starters of this conversation, which was that we're going to step right into the meaty main course. Like I said, this topic is one that is a lot of people that don't really or that haven't really experimented with steroids or used steroids. There's a lot of conceptions, misconceptions in and around it and surrounding it from that perspective. So this is one that even me personally, I'm looking forward to delving in with you guys. So even like before we start, Dave, I want to ask you, what was your initiation or your starting journey into using steroids?
I'm proper old school. I mean, I started using steroids back in 1990. Mm-hmm. So those days, the availability is nothing like it was now. And you'd literally go to the big guy in the gym. And you sort of had to serve an apprenticeship. So they wouldn't sell you the gear unless they thought you were worthy of having the gear. And then when they did sell you the gear, you'd be lucky if you got a course of orals. They wouldn't give you anything else. But my motivation behind starting wasn't... I was a staunch natural for the first 4 or 5 years of my training. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was because I wanted to train harder.
Okay.
So that it was really was more of a performance-based thing where the size was actually a secondary thing. I knew it would enable me to train harder and train heavier, and that was my main motivation initially to start.
Did you have any fears or concerns around it?
I had zero knowledge. Zero knowledge at all. Didn't have a clue. I didn't know about PCT. I didn't know about hormone suppression. I didn't know about side effects. I didn't know what the drugs did. I didn't know how they worked. I knew nothing, absolutely nothing. My first course was 4 years long.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. 4 years. Because I'm saying Tom's there giving a little. All right, I'm gonna push the Tom here now. Because Tom, you've been documenting your journey, right, on YouTube from that basis. Can you just let us know a little bit, like, how did you start? Was it something that you always had some intrigue over, or how did that, you know, become part of your training?
I think we're all very aware of it when we start in the gym. It's quite hush hush, and I took the decision to sort of make the jump into anabolics, just because I started competing as a junior, and you did that sort of thing that you shouldn't do, which is check Instagram. You see who you're competing against. You think, oh shit, they're so much bigger than me, and it was more so a fascination into the sort of the chemistry behind anabolics as well. A big fan of Dave's work. Watched all of his under constructions and purchased all the William Llewellyn anabolic Bibles that I'm sure Dave's very well aware of. And my side, maybe comparison to Dave, was trying to become a sponge and try and take on board as much information as possible before making that jump into taking anabolics. And now it's become almost acceptable to talk about. There's a vast array of knowledge for people to tap into now, compared to probably back in Dave's era, where it was you know, the gym bro saying you must do this at 500 meg a week, for example. So yeah, my fascination was competing as a junior, and then just sort of the fascination into the chemistry behind the substances.
You've got to remember, when I started, the internet didn't exist.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my days. It weren't a simple get on the Google, and you know what I mean?
No, the internet didn't exist. I mean, I'm old. Don't forget that.
All right. Yeah, now it all makes sense from that perspective, I think. So I guess, as you said, you had no real information or real knowledge surrounding it from that perspective. What was, when you were starting, what was the social outlook, you know, taking stories?
It was very much a secret club. It wasn't very heavily discussed. One of the big differences between now and then was, you can go into a gym now and you would be hard pressed to point out everybody that using steroids. Because there's plenty of guys that use that don't look like they've seen anything but the inside of Greg's. It's savage, but it's true. And you know, where then a steroid user stood out like a sore thumb. And it was a small number of people in the gym that were quite insular. They were supportive, but they were quite insular. But doses in general were a lot lower as well.
Okay.
So, but there was no real knowledge from a point of view of the medical side of usage. There was knowledge about what the drugs would give you in the sense of effects, but there was very little knowledge about the medical side of things or what even a PCT was. Most guys didn't know what a PCT was. I did 4 years on one cycle, then I came off. I didn't touch anything for 15, 16 years. And it was only when I came back to steroids 15, 16 years later that I then actually started to learn and research and understand how the drugs worked. The whole drug usage world had changed completely by that point. But even in those 4 years, I had never taken more than 1 gram of steroids a week, which by today's standards is very mild. So in general, there were always and there always was those that used large amounts. But back then, most guys were running quite low doses. But there was a lot of people that did just stay on.
You mentioned there may be loads of people that have no idea what a PCT is. What for those of us that have no idea, what is a PCT?
A PCT is short for post-cycle therapy. So the traditional way of using steroids is that you use them for a period of time, commonly anywhere between 8 and 12 weeks. That's your cycle. And then after that, you use a series of chemicals to restore your natural function, because when you use steroids, your natural hormone function ceases to operate. So you do a little kickstart program called a post-cycle therapy to restore your natural function. More commonly now is that people just don't come off. So PCT is not particularly popular anymore. There's various reasons behind that, and a lot of it, to be honest, is absolute rubbish. But there's this, you know, I'll lose muscle mass if I come off, and it's like, well, you've only put 8 pounds on above your base weight. You're not going to lose that when you come off cycle unless your training's absolute garbage. But that is one of the problems we have now. People are very keen to learn about the drugs, very keen to learn about the diet, but many people don't hone their craft in the actual training. They don't learn the basics. So they start with the technical stuff, drugs and diet, and every nuance of supplement they can use, when they never actually learn the base craft, which is how to train effectively.
Absolutely. Tom, bringing you in on that, how much research did you take into, you know, before you started on your journey in that, from that perspective? And do you do PCT?
So I'd say around about 10 to 12 months, I started my qualifications at Lewisham College. And then during that time, alongside nutrition and training protocols and trying to increase knowledge in that area, I'd kind of branch off a little bit and try and collate as much research on anabolics as possible. Yeah. And when I first started, it was very much, as Dave said, that stereotypical 10 to 12 week cycle, wait for that clearance time, and then we'd introduce some post-cycle therapy. And then in the last couple of years, because I've competed each year, it's been more so blasting and cruising, in the sense that you're taking a dose for that extended period of time, and then we drop back down into a physiological range. But as Dave said, the biggest misconception at the moment with individuals that are taking on board this blasting and cruising is that they're always in that super physiological range. So if you imagine they're taking 250 milligrams, which is their cruise, and then they bump up to 500. If you spend 2, 3, 4 years in that in that phase, you're never really getting back down to that level of physiological range of testosterone. So the potential for then negative side effects to start creeping in is huge.
It's one of the ways to make this quite simple is that doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Do that for a year, and you're going to be in absolute agony. And it's similar. Yeah. So a small increase over natural ranges of testosterone for an extended period of time will create problems. But for a short period of time, those problems are very low risk. But when you're constantly sitting higher than you should be with your hormones year on year on year, you start to develop cardiovascular problems, you start to develop blood value problems. And that's where we're seeing a lot of issues coming forward now with modern day usage. I mean, you've also got to remember that statistically, if you follow the work of a guy called Pope out of the States, statistically, he reports that 80% of all steroid users will continue to use post their first cycle. And that 80% of those, 80%, this is where steroid use is different to every other drug. 80% of those will become testosterone dependent at a certain portion in their life, because their natural endocrine systems will no longer function. Wow. So their natural hormone system will break. What you've got to remember with most illicit drugs is that we get into usage at a certain period in our life. So as a teenager, you may start experimenting with weed. When you start getting into your late teens, you might start going out, and there's alcohol, potentially cocaine, potentially ecstasy, you know, amphetamines possibly, depending on where you are, what your social structure is. Most people will grow out of that as they get older. They settle down into a relationship. Partying becomes less of a thing in their life, and they marry, they have kids, and they may occasionally use recreational drugs, but generally they'll move away. That doesn't happen with steroids. Most people that start with steroids will maintain steroid use throughout their life to some degree, even if it's only at a medicinal dose, but they will maintain. And this is why steroid use is growing exponentially, because you're not getting that drug usage drop off that you would get
coming off.
Yeah.
Yeah, with other drug uses.
Yeah.
Okay. And just to touch briefly, for those that are listening that can't see this physical podcast, what Dave was doing when he said that was rubbing his finger on his palm, just to give a visual for those that are listening on the audio only. So you touched briefly on some of the health implications. Tom, have you looked into like what the long-term health implications are from that perspective? You said you did quite a bit of research into that. Can you just let us know what some of those are, and why indeed, even like with the knowledge of knowing what those are, you're like, it doesn't matter, I'm going for
it. Because at the time and the doses I was taking and the constant blood work, and I work with a company that gets blood work quite occasionally, and this is all discussed with my coach as well, it was a case of monitoring blood work and kidney function, liver function, and biopsies on kidneys, and also scans on the heart as well, and putting myself in the category of, yes, I'm using anabolics, I'm cycling on and off, but my health is relatively acceptable for what I'm taking. And then you start to creep into long term, and I think there's a more systematic data where it's at that middle age of people that have just started, where it's still hard to try and find some hard evidence for users that have been taking anabolics for a set period of time. I think what's interesting, and especially this year and last year, is more so the psychological effects that anabolics are having on a lot of users, which is often overlooked. And I'm sure Dave can comment as well, when using substances like Tren, you're almost turning yourself into this completely different character. And what needs to be studied is that long-term effects of anabolic steroid use, not only physically, you know, kidneys, heart, liver, for example, but in our minds and psychologically.
The three areas of biggest impact where I see the biggest number of issues, and bear in mind that a lot of people come to me when they've messed up. So a lot of what I do is trying to fix people that have damaged themselves.
Yeah.
So the first one and the most common one and most generally accepted by any long-term user is the fact that their natural hormones will no longer work. So they are going to be dependent on testosterone injections for the rest of their life. That is generally accepted as users as being par for the course. So you still get people that are shocked when I have to tell them that they've put themselves in that position, but most people are relatively aware of that element of usage. The other one is heart. Cardiac, unfortunately, on bloods isn't as easily seen. So like heart wall thickening and heart wall stiffening, which will lead to an arterial fibrillation, as in an irregular heartbeat, and can lead to heart failure, which is where the heart fails to beat correctly. That won't show on bloods very easily. So you actually need echograms, angiograms, you need heart workups to actually check for that, which is an area that most people won't go that far. They may be regular with the bloods, but they won't step further than that. Mental health is huge, but it's very complex. Yeah. We've not only got the chemical interactions in the brain, particularly from, as has been mentioned, trenbolone, which is particularly virulent and damaging in the brain, but we've also got the psychological impact of using steroids, and we've got the impact of the health and fitness world in its own right. There's quite a few studies that have shown that basically the mental health of somebody, this sounds quite ironic, but the mental health of somebody deteriorates the more they get involved with fitness and keeping fit. Because they become more focused. And now, an easy way to explain this is, if you study for something, if you invest money or time into something, it may be that you customize a car, or you study for a PhD or a degree, that becomes precious to you, because you've invested money and time in it.
Yep.
So the same happens with your physique. The more time and more money you invest in changing your physique, the more of a priority your physique becomes to you.
Yeah.
And then as a result, things that challenge or question that, you can struggle to deal with mentally. One of the big issues these days is social media. And it's not just the fact that we're exposed to this massive range of physiques, it's that we're exposed to very generally untrue images of physiques.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You know, back in my day, the only physique I saw was the physique that was stood in front of me. These days, I see physiques that I know the person in real life, and it's like, I know you don't look like that picture you've just put up, but you're a master at using angles. But that gives then unrealistic goals to the average person that's looking at that. And so they've worked really hard, they're proud of their achievements, they engage in the fitness world online, and all of a sudden they feel like absolute garbage. Because they're now comparing themselves to unrealistic goals or to untrue goals, and suddenly they're now not successful, they've not achieved anything because they're not as good as the next person they're achieving to. Now, what we find with the chemical interactions with steroids in the brain is not only do they reduce cognitive function, they change our perception of risk, they increase our levels of anxiety. Now, you put those sort of parameters into someone that's now exposed to a plethora of image that's making them feel insecure, and you can see where it becomes a whole melting pot that starts to spiral itself, getting worse and worse and worse. Lockdown has been particularly interesting for somebody like me, who's a person watcher, because I've seen bodybuilders go into absolute meltdown because this large element of their life has now been removed. You see it with professional sports people. When they leave their sport and they were known as being that sports person, they lose their identity because they've got nothing to identify to. So generally they go into broadcasting or commentary or something like that. But that just
to try and stay close.
Yeah, because it keeps them close. They tend to lose identity, and they can really struggle with that. It can be a real difficult transition, and you get the same in bodybuilding because they've invested so much time and so much money. It's one of the few sports, I suppose, that has, even at an amateur level, a huge amount of time and finances invested in it.
Absolutely. Does, from that perspective, do you, Dave, think a lot of people now stepping back into gyms now are going to be using a lot more because they're in prep for...
It's not so much even in prep. I've had a lot of people, even my own clients who I really don't... I hold them back constantly from their drug use. They're wanting to regain what they've lost.
Yeah.
And what they don't grasp is that actually you'll regain the vast amount of that naturally. If that muscle was truly established to your frame, the muscle memory will bring that back fairly, fairly quickly. But the amount of people that are jumping on cycles when they haven't even trained in the last 4 months and they're just going back into the gym is ridiculous. So you've seen a big spike in usage from people wanting to regain what they lost. Seen a few people go completely away from it. Surprisingly, a few people that I know that were starting to have some mental health problems with their usage and were starting to have difficult times, because they've been enforced into this period of no training, no drugs, no nothing, they've actually realized that they're in a better position mentally post that, and so they decided to stay in that natural state. But the vast majority, they can't wait to get back on. And I'm constantly arguing with people, look, back off, give it 4-6 weeks of regular training, regular structured eating, then let's sit and discuss about going back on a cycle. You don't need to jump on from day one. But a lot of people are doing.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly what I would kind of presume from that perspective, because people want to make up for lost time.
Very much so. I mean, you can understand if it's someone who's competitive, who earns a living out of it, or has some sponsorship they have to answer to. But for the vast majority of users, that's not the case. And competitions are still very much up in the air. We've still not got very clear direction as to what shows are running, what shows are not running. The calendar's all over the place.
Absolutely.
So it has been a testing time for users mentally, because they've lost this grip on reality of what is their normal. You know, their normal doesn't exist anymore. And a large number of people, I mean, I know a large number of people sustained cycles through the lockdown, which was, again, a bit daft, really. It's sort of, if you haven't got the facilities you need to progress, then why would you add the chemical to help you progress? Unfortunately, people, the perception of, when I started in steroids, training first, diet second, drugs third. And unfortunately, that's reversed now, and it is, for a lot of people, drugs first, diet second, training last. And yet, training is the thing that starts it all. Training is the thing that stimulates muscle growth. Drugs don't, diet doesn't. I can give you the best diet in the world. If you don't exercise, you're not going to change your physique. You might get leaner, but you're not going to gain any muscle mass.
Absolutely. No, yeah. It's interesting from that perspective. It's interesting from that perspective that... it's been so flip-flop, because people want, like I said, people want the quick gains, but don't want to, they feel like to some extent that you don't have to do the work from that perspective.
The bottom line is steroids do work. if you get the genuine arginol, they do work. And as a result, they can fast-track things and they can patch holes in poor diet and poor training. But that will only get you so far. And the problem is, people are very much, well, it worked in the past, so it'll work again. And when it doesn't, they don't sit there and go, well, maybe I need to review my diet or maybe I need to review my training. They assume, to protect their own egos, they need more gear. They need more drugs. Mm. It's very difficult for anyone to look at themselves objectively and be constructively critical of what they do. And it's very difficult, you know, well, I've always done that way and it's always worked in the past. Yeah, well, it's not working now. Yeah, well, it must be this or it must be that, because it's difficult to take responsibility for the fact that we're not progressing because we eat too much or we eat the wrong things or we're just a bit lazy in the gym. And I know it sounds crazy, but you see, I honestly think if you got rid of steroids tomorrow, if steroids just, you click your fingers and did a Vanos and steroids didn't exist anymore, then you'd probably see over 50% of people currently in the fitness industry disappear.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what? For real? Are you serious?
Because they wouldn't be progressing. So why would they continue doing what they do if they're not getting progress?
Fair point. Tom, what have you got to say about it? Do you agree? Mm.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And then it also, you also end up going down that path of the individuals that are claiming natural but are using anabolics behind the scenes and they're keeping stum about it. So, you know, it's just adding to that point.
I mean,
how do you...
Go on. Sorry, David.
Yeah, sorry.
No, go on.
Yeah, no, what I was going to ask is, you, Dave, you made a very clear and straight point basically saying steroids work.
Hmm?
Straight out, flat out. Okay, cool. So we accept that as a reality that steroids work. The question that I'm going to throw at you both then, and I'm going to start with you, Tom, is then how do you ensure that you use them safely if you do? Because obviously you, Tom, are currently, you know, documenting your fitness journey. What I'm going to ask you, one, do you believe currently you're using them as safely as possible? And can you use them safely?
Yeah, I, speaking for myself personally, I'm using them the safest way possible between blood work feedback and scans at hospitals, and also with help from my coach as well. But what was your question aside from myself?
How can people ensure that they use them safely?
Mm. Of course, I mean, we've got educational sources. Dave is fantastic. There's other individuals on Instagram and many others on YouTube and social media that have a fantastic understanding. But it's also about working alongside an individual that has a far better understanding than you and not following the archetypal cycle that you'll hear down the gym. So we can all respond and react incredibly differently to certain doses. So I may administer 150 milligrams to a client and he has fantastic results. That 150 milligrams to another individual may have hardly anything. So it's that segment of understanding ourselves what this dose dependent will do to us. I think a key part is also, I find with anabolic steroid users, especially in the fitness industry, is this normalization to side effects. And it's this, okay, I've got gynecomastia, I'll just use this to get rid of it, or you know, my testicles are shrunk, there wouldn't be any other scenario where someone would administer a substance and for them to get a side effect and just shrug it off. So it's important that we understand what is occurring during these anabolic steroid cycles and how we can negate those potential negatives.
And Dave, yeah, over to you. How do you ensure you use them safely?
You can't,
from that perspective.
You can't.
Straight up.
You can do as much as you can to minimize risk, but you can't. And the simple reason is because we do not know. Go out and look at research studies on the superfluent pharmacological doses, recreational doses of steroids, and you'll find three.
Three?
There's a three on its impact on muscle and health. There's a few more, and Oslo University have done about four or five on brain impacts, which is where most of the research is looking at the moment. The problem is, you can't take an individual who's a non-steroid user and put them on steroids and see what happens to them in science, because it's unethical, it's not allowed. So you're reliant on information from users, which is generally biased and slightly skewed. That's not to say that you can't minimize risks, and that's not to say that you can't manage risks, because you can. But there is a risk. There is also the problem that as your usage journey continues, your perception of risk changes. And that's the chemical interaction that these drugs can cause within the brain. Now, I've been down the rabbit hole of drug use. I've sat there on the toilet at 3 o'clock in the morning injecting my growth hormone, thinking, what other drugs can I take to get bigger? Which is definitely not the thought process you need to be having. And I came out the other side with heart failure and kidney failure. Now, because my heart failure was drug-induced, it's fixable. It will regress. Yeah. My kidneys won't. My kidneys are trashed and will be trashed for the rest of my life. And I supposedly knew what I was doing. But I did, I mean, I did push the limits, don't get me wrong. I mean, I pushed it as hard and as far as I could go because I wanted to see the limits. A lot of people probably won't understand that, and it's too long a conversation to probably have now. But I deliberately went on the journey I went on, because I wanted to experience and I wanted to see what happened, because we have no information on what happens. We have no information on what happens when someone takes 4 or 5 grams of gear a week and how they cope with that. There is no information about that. It's not readily available. But, you know, that's not to say that, you know, there are plenty of things that we do in our lives that are harmful to us. Energy drinks, alcohol, tobacco, diet, lack of exercise. You could go on and on and on. So, you know, it's not that steroids are this big evil. You abuse any substance and that's going to kick you in the backside at some point.
Yeah.
You smoke 40 cigarettes a day and you're very likely to get cancer. There will be the exceptions, as there always is. You drink a bottle of whiskey a day, you're going to probably be an alcoholic and die of liver failure. You know, so, you know, you eat McDonald's every day, you're probably going to have a heart attack and be obese. So there's, you know, any abuse of any substance is going to create increased health risks. One of the problems we have is that over the last 4 or 5 years, health-conscious individuals and being health-conscious within your uses has increased massively. So people are well aware they need to take bloods. People are well aware they need to do health checks. But what has also happened at the same time is abhorrent readings have been normalized. So in the same way that side effects have been normalized, and as it's generally accepted that, you know, you're going to end up being on testosterone for life at some point, certain blood readings are now normalized. Oh, that's because you're on steroids, it's fine. And it's like, no, you still need to look into the causes behind this, and you need to look at patterns to see if things are worsening or getting out of control. But you, I would say you can use steroids in a responsible and comprehensive way where you minimize risk. And that risk situation is always going to be down to your personal risk and reward ratio. Now, despite the health conditions I have, the damage I've done to my body through my drug use, would I change a thing? No. Would I do it all again? Yes. Because for me, the rewards of that experience and the good I can now do in working with other people was worth the risks.
Okay. Tom, on your side, I mean, Dave has touched like several times about this, about talking about like being on testosterone and stuff like that for or reliant on it for the rest of your life from that perspective. Is that something that you have accepted as part of yours, or do you feel like you won't have to taste and drink from that chalice?
Not necessarily accepted, but it's something I'm very aware of. You know, I'm very much insistent that I would love to start a family, be it next year or the year after that, once I've had a good run at shows next year. But inevitably, and again, feedback will dictate what sort of situation I am in. But we see, I've come into contact with many people that are very much under this. Right, I've had my family, I've had my kids, so fertility is not too much of a worry to me. I'm now going to accept that I'm on testosterone. I'm going to stay on testosterone for the rest of my life. And at that point, it's okay. Well, okay, if fertility is not an issue with you, let's look at this in a way where you are going to be using testosterone for the rest of your life, but let's try and negate as much as possible the side effects. Don't think, right, because fertility is not an issue, I can stay on testosterone for the next 40 years. That 40 years will get cut incredibly short if you are abusing and using in excess of however many grams of testosterone you're using. So that's the area that we need to be concerned about.
Can you obviously there's a reason as to why it's being used from that perspective. The question is, can you get, and this is what the listeners are going to be wondering, is can you actually get the same physique without them?
To a point. So there is a point where your natural progression would equate your steroid progression, but your steroid progression would reach that point faster. But then there becomes a point where you will not progress further naturally, and that's where the steroids take you to the next level. There is no way on this planet I would have walked around at 415 pounds with a 26.5-inch arm naturally. Not on God's green earth. There's no way I was ever going to bench 220 kilo for reps in sets, or shoulder press 220 kilo for reps in sets naturally. That was never going to happen. I'm not naturally a very strong person. That was drugs. But what is a bit ironic is when you speak to users, particularly amateur users, at what their ideal goal physique wise is, it is often a physique that is attainable naturally. But
okay,
let me put it this way. How far is the shop from your house if you want to drink?
Probably about 400 meters.
Do you drive or walk?
Nine times out of ten, I jump in the car and drive there.
So this is the mentality socially we look at.
Yeah.
Why do the hard work if there's a tablet there or an injection there that will make it easier for me to achieve? And you can't really argue with that logic in a sense, because that's what most of our modern developments are based on, is convenience and ease and making life easier and more, so we have more leisure time and less work time. You know, I grew up in families where there was one car. As a kid, the family had one. No one had two cars. Now most families have two cars and might even have a third car for the weekend. And that's how it's changed. We live in a very instant and convenient world. So yeah, it's difficult to say to someone, you know what, mate, you sit there, you lose your social life, you stick to this really rigid diet, you take this really strict and regimented supplement routine, and you train religiously, or, you know what, stick to your diet 70% of the time, train 60-70% intensity, and take these drugs and you'll get the same physique.
All right, okay. The convenience and the accelerator, in essence, from that perspective.
Very much so.
Tom, how much of a role does like genetics play on how good of a physique you can build without them, do you think?
In terms of to the top level of bodybuilding, if we're talking Mr. Olympia level, I think genetics play a huge role. You know, it's the same sort of situation where you'd ask that to a 5'4" basketball player. It's not, you know, the potential for him to go and compete in the NBA is very, very little. But you know, you see some absolute genetic freaks that claim natural, and I'm sure there's many individuals that we can name and have a debate on. But you see incredible genetically gifted natural bodybuilders that are far better than many anabolic steroid users. It just, when you combine the superior genetics on top of the anabolics as well, it creates this, you know, preposterous, even mass monster, or aesthetically, if we're talking about the classic guys, which is a category that is blown up over the last couple of years with the likes of the Chris Bumstead, for example, of these incredibly thin waists and very broad shoulders and legs, for example. So I agree. Genetics will play a very large role in reaching the top of bodybuilding. And also the social media influencer market now is so heavily reliant on your image that you're seeing users that are using short anabolic cycles for the instance of going into reality TV shows as well.
Idiot boy with his anabar.
I didn't even think about that, Tom. Yeah, Tom, I didn't think about that. I see what you're saying. It's true. You see a lot of quick transformations from that perspective when people know that they're getting onto a reality TV show.
And And applications denied because they've had their pre-reality TV check, not naming any shows, but they're not allowed on for the sake of, well, their blood work has shown that they're using this or that.
That was a later addition after the incident of the gentleman coming out of the jungle because he couldn't cope not having his Anavar, which was the most pathetic thing I've ever heard of. But I've spoke to a few of the use of particularly oral steroids within the reality TV enterprise is actually quite high. In fact, it's very high. And off record, a few of them have admitted that not only them, but various other members of the cast have at some point used them. Not necessarily using them at that point specifically, but at some point have used them. It's a lot more common than people realise, and that's where the social stigma seems to have gone. So you've still got there's a bit of a catch-22 within the sports industry because you've got a very large financial industry that generates huge amounts of money. You've got a large number of sponsors that invest huge amounts of money. They don't want to be associated with drugs, but at the same time, they want extremes when it comes to performance. And that's the issue, you know, and that's the contradiction that there is there. I always forget the name of the study, but there was the study done on professional athletes where they asked them if they took a drug that would kill them in 10 years' time, but it would make them number one in the world, would they do it? And a huge percentage of athletes said they would. And when you think that you've dedicated your life to be the best you can be, and you know, you're up at stupid hours in the morning, you're missing family events, you're missing holidays, you're missing this, it isn't a big step mentally for someone to go, well, if you take this tablet, it'll make you 5% faster, 5% stronger.
Yeah, because it's almost like they're halfway there on that.
And there's the other thing. Russia, state doping program. So basically, large percentage of the Russian athletes use steroids. So why didn't they win everything?
Have you got the answer for us?
Well, if a genetic pool the size of Russia, which has a huge population, which means it has a huge genetic pool. And they have training camps that pull people as children to dedicate them into sports for the rest of their life and give them steroids and they're not winning. I can only draw one conclusion. The other guys are using as well.
All right. The plot thickens, Steve. The plot thickens from that perspective. All right. What I'm going to ask then is, because I could see, obviously, clearly you're, would you like to call yourself, in essence, an advocate for not using steroids?
No. I'm not an advocate for use. I'm not an advocate against use. What I am is an advocate for education and choice. But my argument is, if you want to make the choice, you should have the information available that allows you to make that choice. I mean, like as a bodybuilder, I don't think steroids are cheating, unless you're competing in a natural federation that's tested and you shouldn't be using. I don't think it's cheating to use steroids to enhance your physique for your own personal use. I think it's a personal choice.
Yeah.
I do think there are situations where steroids shouldn't be used, but again, you know, I used them, I abused them, I trashed my health. I now spend more time eating pies than I do sitting in a gym. Who am I to cast judgment on someone else's choices and actions?
Then I'm going to come over to you, Tom, and let's look at this from a bodybuilding perspective, because like I said, we've had a strong debate about sport. What's your thoughts on it from that regard? I know Dave touched on it at the end there, basically saying his view is in bodybuilding, it's not cheating. What's your viewpoint in that sense? Do you just think if you're in bodybuilding and you really want to compete and you actually really want to win,
Well, not necessarily, because you've got natural bodybuilders that want to push the limit and compete at the highest possible level from a natural position. So to say that anabolics need to be used indefinitely is not essentially true. You know, there's some fantastic natural bodybuilders like AJ Morris, for example, Alberto Nunes for part of the Team 3DMJ guys that have made an incredible sort of portfolio of natural bodybuilding. It then comes down to the question of You've also got people that are unhappy with the amount of anabolics that people take in non-tested. So, you know, you've got the top guys that are taking grams and grams per week, and then maybe a guy who only takes a little amount and they kind of feel hard done by. So the only problem, again, agreeing with Dave, is running into when users are taking anabolics in natural competitions. Aside from you know, personal use, I try and deter people from taking anabolics because they've got Ibiza in 6 weeks, you know. It's the amount of emails I get and Instagram messages saying, I'm going on holiday in 6 weeks' time. I want to look good for my Instagram picture at Ocean Beach. What should I take? And I say, well, you know, it's all well and good if you were going to Ocean Beach and weren't drinking or taking any recreational drugs like cocaine and ecstasy. But the fact that you're putting your body under 6 weeks' worth of pressure for anabolics and then the recreational drug usage over there, it is shocking. But again, who are we to judge? Who am, you know, I've made some, you know, probably wrong decisions in my lifetime. Why should my opinion matter?
Absolutely. I guess it's hard from that perspective, being in a position where you use or you've used and so on and so forth for various different reasons, to then give, to sit on a holier than thou position. But at the same time, you guys with the experience from that perspective are the ones that, you know, have, in essence, the experience. You've experienced it, so you can give.
For me, the issue is around honesty.
Yeah.
If you use, you should be honest about what you use. And what you should also be honest about is what's happening with your usage, not just the positive, but the negative.
And that's why I rate what Tom's doing from that perspective, with documenting his fitness journey, his journey from that perspective, because he's one, being very open and honest from that perspective of, all right, this is what I'm doing, this is what's happening from that perspective. But also detailing, you know, throughout, what that journey and what that process looks like on that basis. And I don't know if we have too much of that within the industry, of people actually just being a lot more transparent or vulnerable from that perspective with using.
I'm probably going to blow my own trumpet a bit here, but
yeah, go on, Dave, tell us.
When I did the under construction projects, so I did the same as Tom did, I documented everything live on YouTube. And the one rule we had with those two films that we produced was, it had to be the truth. Now, the first one is, in its way, a bit tame. It shows injecting and a few other things which had never really been seen before on camera in that way. Mm-hmm. But the second one literally shows me destroying my health.
Yeah, those shots of you in the when you were getting the blood work feedback done were quite harrowing.
Oh, you see me in hospital at the end of it. Yeah. And we deliberately made a conscious decision that we weren't going to Americanize and sugarcoat what we did. It was going to be warts and all. And if that ended up me in a box, then that's what it would end up showing on that film, would be me in a box. And I do think that, and I see this all the time on social media interactions, where people go, yeah, I'm on cycle, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and I'm getting really strong and I'm really going well. And then literally within hours, I'll get a message from the same person going, look, I can't get an erection anymore. Mrs. is talking about leaving me. I keep losing my stack and blowing my temper with people. And you're just like, well, why are you promoting it in the way you are? If you're having
this issue, what's happening.
Why don't you tell both sides of the coin?
Absolutely.
Some of the stories that people have admitted to while being on Trent are of incidents of just out and outright rage. A guy decided to pass someone on the island on the outside of the fast lane on the motorway, so he was between the car and the railings at 100 mile an hour because he wasn't going fast enough for him in the fast lane. That was drug-induced. The guys that have ripped wing mirrors off and smashed them through car windows and pulled keys out of people's cars because they blocked them and thrown them into the rivers. And the stories go on and on and on. Short surveys that I've done, particularly around Trent, have shown that 30% of users have had a serious aggressive incident related to the usage. And about 60% reported anxiety whilst on Trend, and 30% reported anxiety from problems continuing after they'd finished using the drug. But if people aren't open and honest about this stuff, then people don't get the full picture, and they think it's just scare stories or media hyping up the bad side of things. And unfortunately, the media has had a bad habit of doing that. I've done long-term interviews and video diaries with media or outlets that have put together an online content piece or you know, another type of content piece, and they've been told by their editors that it's not negative enough against steroids, so they're not going to air it.
I got cut. Wow. I got cut from an ITV show exactly the same. I had a sit-down interview with quite a well-known TV producer, TV host, and it wasn't, the content wasn't juicy enough, and it didn't get aired. But what did get aired was half an hour of just completely slating anabolic users for being scum, low of the earth, violent, and you know.
The truth is sensationalistic enough to have a story. There are those extremes. Yeah. It does go on, but there are also doctors, teachers, lawyers, policemen, fathers, mothers that use steroids and do so with very little impact into their lives.
There's a massive interesting conversation to be had surrounding about how integrated steroids is in a normal life as well. So I'm going to throw back the main question to both of you guys. Tom, I want to kickstart with you. Are steroids the answer for better bodybuilding?
Again, it's tricky, but if we mean better by a more aesthetically appealing physique, be it whatever category of bodybuilding is, if we mean better by more audience being gathered at bodybuilding shows because we have bigger mass monsters, then essentially, yes, anabolics are going to inevitably lead. Let's not be naive on anabolics and what they can do to bodybuilding here. But the problem then runs into this fascination of anabolics and everyone using them being open about it that then lead to this massive influx of negative side effects and not enough people documenting it, and two, not ensuring their health whilst on cycle. So yeah, it's a tricky yes or no question to answer.
Over to you, Dave.
I think anabolics create more extreme bodybuilding. Not necessarily better. I think bodybuilding is the process of developing your physique to your ideal or to a criteria ideal. That isn't necessarily a role that needs anabolics to complete. I also think that I have no less respect for Mr. Olympia as I do for a natural who wins the World Natural Bodybuilding Championships. Because they are both at the pinnacle of what they do. Yes, there is differences in mass. It doesn't mean that the user trains any less hard, because to be at that level of physique, you've got no choice. Everything has to be on point. In the same way that the natural doesn't do anything any less hard, because he has to be on point to make the pinnacle of his physique. So I don't think it creates better bodybuilding. I think it creates more diversity in bodybuilding, and I think it creates more extremes in bodybuilding. And if we ever nail myostatin suppression, then you're going to see things that are next level. Now, myostatin, for those that don't know, is a hormone that regulates muscle growth. Now, many people will be familiar with a Belgian blue bull. It's a cow that looks like it's on steroids. It's just muscle on top of muscle on top of muscle. That's because it has been bred to have a myostatin deficiency. Myostatin research, or myostatin suppression research, is the holy grail in muscle wastage disease treatment. So it is something that science is actively looking to develop. If that drug's ever developed successfully, then you'll see, because that will create muscle without even moving off your arse. You will just grow. Because your regulatory system that stops muscle growth has been removed. That will see another level. Does that make it better? No, not necessarily. And then again, it's down to your perception of what the ultimate physique is. I like mass monsters because I appreciate the effort and stress it takes to get to that size, having been there. That doesn't mean I don't respect the likes of Frank Zane, Danny Padillo, you know, Bob Paris, guys that created amazing aesthetic physiques, because their focus was on the balance and flow of their physiques, whereas your Marcus Rule was on how big can I get?
Pushing it to the limit. It was a limit pusher.
Yeah, and so they both deserve respect as far as I'm concerned, because it's like saying, is a sprinter a better athlete than a marathon runner?
True. Okay, it's apples and in essence, it's almost apples and pears. Although we're talking about all fruits, it's practically apples and pears from that perspective. Okay.
Bodybuilding is a very personal thing in that, you know, my journey was what I wanted to achieve personally. And a lot of people disagreed with it. And I got a lot of criticism for it. I got a lot of hate for it. A hell of a lot of hate. But that was my personal journey. That was what I wanted to do with my physique. And that's no different. If you manage to fit into a criteria and compete, great.
We do have some audience questions for you both. Our listeners have got some questions for you both, and I'm going to kickstart with Tom here.
Yeah.
Would you ever consider competing as a natural bodybuilder?
I don't know what the ground would be for me competing as a natural bodybuilder after I've taken anabolics, but my biggest regret was taking anabolics far too early and far too early in my training career. I would love to have pushed myself naturally, and of course we all do sort of holiday cuts and we look in good condition, you know.
I wish I
would have taken it there as a natural competitor on the stage. But if I could wind the clocks back, then the answer to that question would be yes. Squeeze out as much a natural potential as possible, compete at that natural level, and then look into going into the world of anabolics.
Awesome. Dave, are you still training nowadays? And if so, what's your training plan like?
I'm training to be an international pie eater. I haven't. Some conscious, some just other priorities. My projects took a huge amount of effort, time, and sacrifice from not just myself, but from my family as well. So when I came out of the back of them, I made the conscious decision that though I would still train, it would no longer be a priority. I haven't trained during lockdown at all, apart from probably a dozen sessions on a boxing bag. And I've just focused on work and other things, but as it happens, I am actually renewing my membership tonight and going back to the gym on Friday. But I will never, ever pursue the size or mass game that I used to. My goal now is generally just, I mean, I'm knocking on 50, you know, I'm lucky I'm still alive with this stupid stuff I've done to myself over the years. And to be quite frank, I got out of it relatively well considering what I did do to myself. So I'm just happy to you know, improve my health and just live out my days steady away. It's been a difficult transition, going from so extreme, being so strong, being so big, to being relatively normal has not been an easy mental journey. I have to admit that it's been difficult. But I feel that I'm in a position now where I can go to the gym without sitting there thinking, God, I used to do this. God, I used to do that. God, that used to be easy, and now I can't lift it off the ground. I think I've gone past that now, which is one of the reasons why I'm going back to the gym.
Tom, one for you. Do you ever worry about the long-term health risks? As in, does that stress you out at all?
It does, not necessarily stress, I don't think that's the right word, but I'm very well aware, you know, I don't lose sleep over it. I'm very confident in my ability to assess what's going on and dose dependent for me at this particular time. So, you know, it's very much a case of living in the now and ensuring that my health is a number one priority. And if it were to get to the point where I wouldn't be able to continue use, or I wouldn't be able to use a certain substance or compound due to, you know, potential serious negative side effect, then I would do so.
And then finally, one for you, Dave. What was or is your worst side effect?
That's difficult. Because I view the health implications that have come off my usage as part of the journey I made. So I don't view them particularly as negatives. I just view it as that was the journey, you know. Would I like to have normal health? Yeah, of course I would. I mean, who wouldn't? But I, at the same time, I don't sit here in regret, and I don't sit here in woe is me or any of that. I would have said that the worst side effect I had to cope with, and generally, actually, through my usage, my side effects have been quite mild. My health problems post-usage are where my side effects have really manifested. But there was a period of time when I started to get a very strange sort of acne. And it wasn't like your normal pimples. It was like beard boils almost. But they were very, very deep, so you couldn't sort of squeeze them out. And I sort of resembled Worf off Star Trek rather than I resembled a human being. That was a very difficult time to cope with mentally, because I got to the point where I was severely, very conscious of the fact of how I looked. But in general, stuff like gyno or back knee, bad acne on the back and stuff like that, I'd never really had. I just had this breakout on my face. That lasted about 2 months, maybe slightly longer. And that was actually a central nervous trigger. It was the drugs, but it was the stress the drugs were placing on my central nervous system. Otherwise, side effects, really, I'd never had a lot of issues. I had health implications from my uses, but your normal stuff that you get, like when I used Tren, I didn't get angry, I didn't get hot, I didn't get appetite problems or any of that stuff. And when, you know, we were talking about genetics earlier on, one of the genetics that plays a role in using steroids is your genetics to cope with the drugs, is how your resilient your body is to the drugs.
Okay, no, thank you. Thanks massively for that, and thanks to our audience as well for sending those questions in. I hope that has provided a lot of insight from that perspective. Now, we always like to ask our guests for one thing or person that has influenced them, and secondly, one piece of advice that they're going to give to our listeners. So, Dave, you just finished. I'm going to start back again with you. Influence and advice.
From my training career, I'd say probably one of the early influences, well, there was a couple. One was a guy called Kev Taylor, who was a lightweight and middleweight British champion. Kev still competes now, competes with NABBA. He used to compete with the EFBB back in the day. And he's a woman called Marianne Gay, who was a pro. They taught me what hard training really was. But in that mix was Ian Harrison, Mike Quinn, and a few other people who I had the privilege of training with. Billy Payne, another one who was one of Dorian's training partners. These were people I was training with when I was 16 and 17. So I learned very early on what hard training really was like. And that became my mantle from then moving forward. So from a training point of view, they were very influential. A piece of advice, I would say be honest. Be honest not only with the people around you, but be honest with yourself. And it's not the easiest thing to do. We all make mistakes in life. We all mess up. There's a knack to learning from that mistake, but not living in that mistake. You need to accept, and that's part of the honesty part of it, accept what you have done or haven't done, learn from it and move on. If you don't, you'll just continually repeat that mistake because you're in denial of it. Being honest with people around you, being honest with what you want in life, being honest with yourself about what your capabilities are, what you're willing to do. In the fitness industry, there are thousands upon thousands of people trying to achieve goals that they will never attain because if they're honest with themselves, they just don't want it enough. And they end up in a perpetual cycle of, quite often drug use as well, of just never getting there, but making themselves miserable in the process. There's nothing wrong with not training seriously if all you want to do is mess about in the gym a little bit. You know, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with sitting at home and eating pies. If that's what you want to do. Notice I say pies a lot. Yeah. I've got a thing about pies. I'm a northerner, all right? Pies are very important to northerners. So I'd say honesty. Honesty, to me, is one of the key elements in life that will make your life better.
Thank you so much for that, Dave. Tom, over to you.
Yeah, inspiration-wise from a bodybuilding sort of training aspect would have been Dorian Yates. I remember buying his Blood and Guts DVD a long time ago, and that was a first sort of injection of what true training is. And other inspirations from bodybuilding would be Chris Bumstead, just aesthetically, you know, who's holding reign of the classic world at the moment. And and McGregor is a big, Conor McGregor is a big, I idolise him a lot in terms of all aspects of personality and business too.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much. Thanks both of you guys for sharing.
Pleasure.
You know, what's influenced you and a great piece of advice for both of you and for our listeners. And that just about wraps up this week's episodes of My Proteins The Scoop podcast. A huge thank you once again to our guests Tom and Dave, who's given us some incredible, exceptional insights surrounding a world that I don't know too greatly myself, but one that I've managed to peel back the curtain ever so slightly. Please, guys, keep the conversation going via social media using the hashtag #TheScoop, and indeed in the comments too. Also, if you're watching this on YouTube, click that subscribe button and give us a little like as well. Don't worry, we'll be back again soon for another episode. I've been David Alorco. You've been watching The Scoop. Thank you for listening.